Welcome to the ML Platform Podcast, brought to you by Neptune AI. In a show where Piotr and Arimas, together with top MLOps practitioners, explore the world of internal ML platforms and MLOps stack components. Today we've brought Olalakan from HRS Group to talk about building an internal ML platform at Scout24.
And our leading principle, one of the number one leading principles, says customer view first. And to be honest, the customer doesn't care if you are running on in the Pacific Ocean or running on maybe black hole out of space, right?
Now onto the show.
Hello everyone and welcome to Machine Learning Platform Podcast. And today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, who is a founder and CEO at Neptune AI. And today as a guest on the episode, we have Olalakan Ellison, who is currently a director of data platform and a data architect in HRS Group. And he was previously also a TPM, which stands for Technical Product Manager at Scout24. I'm really feeling that this episode will be really good as we'll get to discuss a lot of good stuff around building internal machine learning platforms. And nice to have you on the episode, Olalakan. Would you mind sharing something about yourself with our listeners?
All right. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for having me here. Thank you, Rimas. Thank you, Piotr. My name is Olalakan Ellison, Lakan for short, director of data platform and a data architect at HRS Group. Like you said previously, I was the technical product manager for the AI platform at Scout. And then on my weekends, so when I'm free, I'm also a machine learning hero for AWS.
Who is, by the way, who is machine learning hero?
So I think it's AWS recognized for people that have done impressive, let's say, really good work in contributing to community knowledge about machine learning or different areas in AWS. So we have people around developer tools, we have people in data, we have people in serverless or containers. Developer tools, serverless, data, machine learning. I think there's another one.
So kind of evangelist?
Some kind of evangelist, but not employed by HR. So it's more community driven.
And does it come with any additional responsibilities or is it more of a title? Do you get anything from it?
Ah, okay. Yeah, sure. We get special goodies, right? So I think sometimes they give us, they give us AWS credits just to try out new technologies on AWS. And then to write about them. And for us, it's kind of fulfilling, right? Because I get to try some of my assumptions, some of my crazy ideas. And like the other people, they get to try out crazy ideas and also encourage the engineering community or the broader developer community to also try things out and experiment, because it's through experiments that we know that things actually work or will not work. And this is, for me, it's a really good, I think it's one of the initiatives that I think AWS started a long time ago. And I see other cloud providers, even that are, let's say, cloud compute providers also offering something similar. And even non-cloud compute providers also offering, now doing similar things. Because this is, I believe this is a way to scale adoption of services.
Okay, and when it comes, okay, so you're AWS hero. And when it comes to other cloud platforms, so what's your opinion? Like, are you strictly AWS and nothing else, or...
Well, for me, to be honest, I'm not strictly AWS or nothing else. I think it's, I go where the customer is, right? And I go where the problem is solved.
So when it comes to HRS, where the customer is, do you use AWS or your multi-cloud?
So we're a multi-cloud company, but we're primarily AWS. So we have a couple of things that are distributed by nature of where the company, we're still in our journey towards cloud, and there are some things that in other cloud providers, but we are primarily on AWS.
Okay, that's nice. So you mentioned before that you had lots of problems as a data engineer or data platform engineer when working with Hadoop and HDFS. So I have kind of this question maybe around distinguishing between data platform engineers and data engineers. Is there a difference? Because I, for example, imagine data engineers already being provided a platform that we shouldn't care too much about and work on it. So you were data platform engineer or data engineer when you had issues with Hadoop?
Ah, okay. I was a data platform engineer, but So I think the people just make the splits depending on the company and depending on the context. So I was a data platform engineer or also a data engineer at the same time. We were building pipelines and I expected the platform to be there, but I was also part of the team building the platform. So like people say in the product world, you eat your own dog food. So if the data platform was messy, we were the first people to get to know about it. And because it was painful for us to maintain and use, we also decided to really make our own lives easier and make it usable for ourselves. So I think in general, it depends on the company. So when you have separated platform teams, that is when you want to scale your data analytics environment, then you have a dedicated platform team. We want to compose them of, let's say, data platform team as an example. You want to compose them of data engineers and software engineers and maybe a combination, maybe a mix of people with infrastructure background. And you are building that for maybe data engineers, analytics engineers, data scientists, and data analysts. The same applies to machine learning platforms, right? It's when you want to scale that you want to really move fast. Then when you're building internal in machine learning platforms, you want to make sure that the team building that has an understanding of what they are building for, and then what it takes for people to be successful using that machine learning platform.
And Laken, to define terminology here. So you said that you've been building data platform, now it's also machine learning or maybe AI platform. What does it really mean to build a platform in the context of having like using cloud providers or cloud provider like AWS, that from me, like they have components for almost every piece of the stack, right? Why won't we call AWS a ML platform, and why we need a platform team on top of that?
That's a very, 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 that's one of the smartest questions I have heard in a long time.
Oh, like it is me who ask it.
And even also to Orima's question earlier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what? If now that I think about it, I think it really ties to, again, the company. So a lot of times, when you think about how we make, when I was an engineer, I used to think differently. Now that I'm in engineering leadership, I think about these questions differently right now. And if I'm to answer that as in my current position, I'm looking at AWS and I'm looking at the people in the organization and how well they can grow from zero to value in 24 hours or 8 hours of work. And if I look at the suite of any cloud provider, even AWS, let's say AWS right now, for a different engineering or technical persona, they can do that. But for the broader persona that we have in the company, they might not be able to do that. So how can we enable the broader persona in the company and elevate their experience? That's why we then have people build internal platforms. And then internal platform is also, we also consider it as a strategic differentiator. This is how we as a company differentiate ourselves from our customers, because we are able to simplify how our colleagues can deliver value to the customer, to our suppliers, to the ecosystem that we play in as quickly as possible. And this is why I believe people should make decisions on building an internal platform. The same moment when I was at Scouts, when we were building the AI platform, it was mainly around how can we make sure that we differentiate as quickly as possible with the ML capabilities that we have and the highly skilled data scientists that we have that we had at the company back then.
And Laken, I need to ask you this question because, myself as a CEO of a startup that is imperfect in many ways, right? I see many areas for improvement all the time. But I also believe that as a company, we don't need to be state of the art in every aspect of our business. We need to identify just a few super important areas where we need to excel. The rest needs to be good enough. Why for HRS or Scout24, delivering from zero to value in 24 hours or 8 hours is so important. Why you wouldn't be okay with, let's say, okay, 2 weeks, from zero to value in 2 weeks? It is still, you know, it's still not so slow, right?
No. Definitely, it's not so slow. But I think we'd like to push the... So if I think about the reason why I joined HRS, right? And the mission statement of the company is like, we transform how businesses stay, work, and pay and make their lives easier. And if we do that for the businesses, why can't we do that for ourselves? And for me, one of the most interesting things is that we might not be at zero to value in 8 hours, but that's the target we're aiming for, right? We can think of an idea, we can test it out, and we can get it into the hands of customers as quickly as possible. And that way we learn by experimenting if this moves the needle, moves the market, reshapes the entire value stream for our customer. Zero to value in 8 hours is quite ambitious, but 2 weeks is... some people, it might be sufficient, but for us, it's that this is what we strive for.
Actually, this is kind of bridges to one of my thoughts that I had during like last 2 days. So I was thinking about end-to-end solutions versus point solutions. So we talk a lot about that. So when it comes to machine learning, so we are experiment tracker, someone is a feature platform, right? To me, it looks like once you provide this end-to-end machine learning platform, you kind of limit yourself to coming up with new things that can benefit the industry. And while you're producing a point solution, you kind of... this is where you innovate, right? Because you can do more focused things. What's your opinion around this? Like, maybe both point solutions versus... end-to-end and this specific idea, because I haven't seen it discussed yet anywhere, actually.
Ah, okay. So I think it's a journey of maturity. So I came across a book a long time ago. It was written in 2004. It's called The Long Tail by Chris Anderson. It's in the shelf back here. It's an excellent book, and it talks about figuring out differentiating market opportunities, even though you standardize across multiple things. And then those long tails are where you can really differentiate, because they have really tailored needs. And in my head right now, but really internally, we built a data platform that works, that scales, that's on AWS. But then we're looking at what are the differentiating capabilities that we can ship to our colleagues in the company that helps them become better. So right now we're evaluating using large language models to improve the accuracy of, let's say, figuring out the relationship between two things or between two streams, which different teams used to do individually, and it was a bit manual. And this is then, even though we've built end-to-end, now we're building differentiating capabilities that are business capabilities, but then everybody in the company don't have to rebuild it. And if you flip that into the industry, right, we have people that will build end-to-end. And so we have AWS as an example, building serverless, building EC2, Fargate, and all these things, and putting the step functions, Airflow, and all these possibilities. But then I think last year at reInvent, AWS decided to launch Amazon's AWS supply chain, which is then industry-specific. For supply chain, they built Amazon Health Lake, which is a data lake for health. They built, I think, something about finance. So it's eventually, right, you need to zero in on those specifics and see how you can really solve it. Example, you are solving for, let's say, logging and improving monitoring or visibility or explainability with machine learning models. These are things that I'm not sure SageMaker team will do exceptionally well like you are doing, but you have found a niche to say, let's zero in on this possibility. And as you will see that the more you keep exploring, the more you realize that we have built an end-to-end, but then there are even long tail use cases that we also need to continue to solve for to improve the customer experience. I think this is how I think about it. It's not that, for me, it's not an either or, it's together.
I think that when it comes to AWS, from my perspective, yes, it can be thought as end-to-end platform. If you look at the feature, like feature by feature, everything would be green, or almost everything would be checked, right? So end-to-end. But in practice, I think it is a store of services, point solutions that are integrated to some extent, sometimes better, sometimes not, but they're easy to replace, like particular solution, and you use a third party tool. I think that I've read something like align those lines on AWS, one of AWS blog posts. I don't remember the exact one, but I think that it is in line with their strategy. So I'm not surprised that they are like, maybe 8 years ago, I remembered all the AWS services. Today, I don't even know what is the number.
Even their own employees don't know everything.
Yeah, I'm just listing the names and not saying what they do, right? But
yeah, you're totally right. So if it's like you said, their strategy is for engineers. So toolbox. And what I mean by end-to-end doesn't mean, it might mean that you can plug and play all of them. It might mean that some are difficult to put together. But then the strategy, at least the way I would think about it, is a maturity journey. And I would say you have to think about end-to-end at some point, depending on the niche that you're in. And then think about long tail use cases around it. And this is to Orima's question, right? It's for me. It's a strategy I would solve for together. How I then allocate resources from an organization standpoint to solve that might differ. So I might say 70% of our resources is building that end to end. 30% goes into figuring out where are the niche use cases that we need to build capabilities around.
So this is regarding internal ML platforms. So what I was referring mostly was about, let's say, companies that are not as big as AWS, that are maybe have a few hundreds of engineers, and they are trying to build these end-to-end platforms, while companies of the same size, 200 engineers, are building the point solutions, right?
Okay. I would focus on the point solution.
Yeah, I agree. But this is exactly where I thought that eventually, like these SaaS tools, or not necessarily SaaS tools, maybe open source tools that are point solutions, will probably be the places where new use cases and new capabilities will be created that are not yet present in the entire kind of ecosystem, right?
Definitely. To be honest, I completely agree with you. So I would really focus on point solutions. If I have limited resources, it's point solutions. And the funny thing is that the point solution then becomes end-to-end at some point because it also grows.
So, Laken, I want to understand from your perspective a difference, a boundary, maybe we don't need a boundary, between data platform and ML platform.
We do and we don't. So when I was at Scout, I was part of the data platform engineers, and I decided to take on the opportunity to be the technical product manager for the ML platform, which we just started at that point in time, right? And when I spoke to my colleagues, which were in the data platform team, I said, well, what do you think we should build first? They all were like, you need to solve data quality. You need to solve for data quality, because they were seeing it really, really integrated. And we ran a couple of exercises with the people that we believe were the target customer or the target internal customers of the ML platform back then. And we realized that data quality was number 4 or number 5, I cannot remember, on their importance bucket list.
And what is important bucket list? How it was created?
So there is this technique in product management called jobs to be done, and outcome driven innovation. We ran a couple of surveys, we re-ranked them, and then figured out which outcomes people felt were most important for them to get value to the customer with machine learning. And data quality turned out to be, I think, number 5 or number 4. The first, number one most important, if I can remember, is knowledge about how to build machine learning models. So people wanted to know how to really build and deploy machine learning models. Number two was an environment where they could really run, use their Jupyter notebooks as quickly as possible. And number three was, I've forgotten the third one, but it was three. And what we saw was that at that point in time, it was really, really separated from the data platform. Even though we needed to access the storage layer of the data platform, but the capabilities that people were looking out for, or the customers of the AI platform were looking out for, were completely about 80% detached from what the data platform team was offering.
I wanted to ask, would you agree then that data quality is kind of something that data engineers and data platform engineers should focus on and deliver quality data to machine learning engineers?
No. I think everybody in the company is responsible for the quality of the data. And if I go by just from a strategy point of view, which is if we say data is a key asset of the company, right? It is everybody's responsibility. From where data is produced to how it gets into wherever it is stored, we need to ensure as much as possible the highest quality. Now the metric for highest quality is dependent on every organization. But at the point in time where we were figuring out who are the early adopters of the AI platform and what outcomes do they want to achieve with the AI platform, data quality was number four on their list, or number five. It wasn't that data quality was not important. It was more like what we need to do to move as fast as possible that will make us really happy and make sure that we're contributing value to the company using this idea of your ML platform is not solving data quality at this point in time.
I think that if you ask data engineers, maybe their wish list would be different, right? Or needs list. But you're kind of providing, from what I'm hearing, a definition, like maybe not explicitly, but implicitly, that it can be defined by personas, by users, right? So I guess that do you remember what were the job titles of people you've surveyed for AI platform?
Data scientists, software engineers, and product managers, with a large focus on data scientists. No, the ML platform. Not the ML platform.
Then it makes sense. Because usually like data engineers might not necessarily need to even touch the machine learning platform, right?
Exactly. So I didn't listen to my former colleagues.
Yeah, but then it's not so surprising why the first need was how we can build and deploy, right?
Exactly.
But do you remember, it was what, 5 years ago?
I think this was 2019.
Okay, four.
Yeah. 2019, yeah.
But then again, getting back to that point about maybe data platform being the source of data quality, how do you think like machine learning platform could influence data quality? Because machine learning platform, at least in my mind, maybe you have a different point of view, kind of starts when the data is already curated and kind of exposed for machine learning engineers. Of course, you need to be able to access the raw data for exploratory purposes, but data scientists and machine learning engineers maybe would not do the curation part themselves, right? It's part of a data engineering pipeline. What are your thoughts around this?
Okay, my thoughts. I have a very different, I think differently. I think most people right now, I think in the industry, they're trying to push, in the data community, they're trying to push for data contracts. And the reasoning behind this is that we want to make sure that data engineers don't make the lives of data engineers very miserable. And I think, like I said before, if we are to consider data as a key company asset, then everybody is responsible for the quality. So from where the data is coming from, where's the source of the data itself? Is it coming from, software applications? We must ensure that before the producer of this data ensures quality. That's if you think about security and shift left, I would apply the shift left approach to where is the source of the data, and we start ensuring quality from where the data is generated. Then it gets into the...
I'm not sure if I agree, but I'm curious. What about a case where like the data is a side effect, let's call it a positive side effect of my or this business function. Like they don't, you may need this particular data in for other like business line. We can generate it, but it is not the core business, right? I like for this particular business unit. Why, like, so, you know, why I should care so much about the quality if I don't need it, if it is not.
Yeah, and this is one of the things where I said it's more of a, it's a culture first than let's say technical solution, because the number one thing in any company that wants to move in direction of data is that we need to see data differently. When we start seeing data as a side effect, nobody would care. But if we all come to an understanding that this data, irrespective of how tiny it is helping us to improve our processes or improve our offerings to our customer, is helping us to reshape the market, then we treat it differently. And this is then the mindset that everybody, it's not like everybody needs to become a data engineer, is that we all need to change our approach towards technology. We all need to change our approach towards software. We all need to change our approach towards data. Then even if it's a side effect, or it starts as, not even if it's, it is, it starts as a side effect, but then we see the possibility of someone using it and then bringing business value, then we all see that we are working towards the company goal.
Yeah, like one is identify that this particular data is bringing value to other units, that makes sense, right? But
I agree, Flaken, to be honest. I agree, Flaken, because if you have good enough processes in your company that allow you to enforce the data contract on the producer side, meaning the usually software engineer who's building the product, it is generalizable so much that it's probably not that complicated to introduce data contracts for these small data points.
But what I was curious about is how at Scout24 you decided that it makes sense to build ML platform. What was the trigger? Who made this decision and why?
Mm. So I think if I think back, if I remember correctly, we were in a technology transformation back then. And our CEO, his name is Richard. I've forgotten his last name. He's the CEO back then. And in collaboration with other the technology leaders, realized that we can really speed up delivery to the customer. So application delivery, data delivery, or data value delivery. So it was about DevOps transformation, really hinged on technology. And we looked at the value stream and we saw, oh, applications have to go through XYZ before they get into the hands of customers, or features have to go through a couple of things before they get into the hands of customers. So how can we make that faster? So we started the application platform. And which was in Provi for another team. The data platform was already there. And it was, and then we looked at, and then I think they looked at what other value capability do we deliver to our customers or suppliers? And there was data science in there. And we saw that at that point, it was taking us a really long time to ship data science capabilities into the hands of customers. So his idea was, along with the other technology leaders, let's see if we come up with an AI platform, and if this helps us to speed up the delivery of data science capabilities or data science features or advanced analytic features into the hands of our customers. So there was then three platform pillars: application platform, data platform, and AI platform. And at that point, the data platform had no bandwidth to actually add ML or AI platform to what it was doing, because it was a lot. So we decided to break it out and say, there is a dedicated AI platform, and then you have data scientists as internal customers, you have product software engineers as your internal customers. Make it work for these people.
And do you remember how many data scientists and software engineers who were doing something with ML models Scout24 had at the time?
I think, if I can remember, I think about, let's say, data scientists, maybe 12 to 14. software engineers, I cannot count. I think almost every team wanted to do something with machine learning. Almost everything.
Okay. Okay. And did you have at that time already some ML models in production, or everybody wanted?
We had some in production. We had some in the pipeline that should go into production. We had some that were being developed that was taking really long to get into production. And not even the ML models alone, even the experience for the data scientists or for the software engineers who wanted to build machine learning models needed to be simplified. And those were the things that we saw and then said, let's build this and make this possible.
And you were at this project from the very beginning, or you joined late? From the very beginning?
I was from the very beginning.
Okay. So I understand the CEO or CTO decided, let's create a platform to speed up the delivery of data solutions to your end users. But it is still pretty vague. Like, it is objective, right? It doesn't have 10 KPIs. How did you start? Like, what was the next step? What was your initial team? You are the leader, technical product manager, so I guess a leader of the team. What were the first 3-6 months? Where was the focus?
Yeah, I think for me, the first 3-6 months, because we had a very short time to really show that this was a viable investment, I think the first 2 months was more really figuring out the problems that we wanted to solve. So there is a mission, there is a vision, but what does that mean on a day-to-day basis? What does that mean from a strategy standpoint? And that's why I said we ran a couple of surveys, which is, I recommend the book for any technical product manager. It's Outcome-Driven Innovation. It's very, very simple book to read.
I will write it down. I will read it.
And then we ran a couple of surveys with the personas that we believe we wanted to target, and then ran some statistics on top of those surveys to figure out what is the most pressing problem given this mission. What is the most pressing problem that the personas that we wanted to target really wanted us to solve for? And that was why I mentioned that the knowledge, the ease of training, the ease of deployment was the first three. And that was how it started. We had three engineers, but one of them was working half the time on another initiative. So we had two and a half engineers. And all we could do was to focus on the most important problem. We had no opportunity to run around and say, let's solve for data quality first. Let's solve for this first. Let's solve for that first. We needed to make sure that we're solving the right problem at every point in time.
But the very first problem you mentioned, as far as I remember, was
knowledge.
So by the, maybe at the time there were no Coursera MLOps course.
Yeah. So it was more knowledge that was really, really tailored to the problems that we had internally. So we had to create tutorials, step-by-step tutorials, because we're already on AWS, so it's SageMaker that showed how to deploy a model on SageMaker for a specific use case for Scout 24, which was AutoScout and ImmoScout back then, was specific to those use cases. And then once we had the workshops. It was about 2 hours or 3 hours after creating those content, it was the workshop. And then in those workshops, I then used it, or along with the team, used it to learn the problems that people had in training and deploying. So in deploying, it went from, so like you can train with a notebook. In deployment, you can just SageMaker endpoint.deploy. But then you had to have a REST API, because that's how people think about, oh, I have an API to my model. And then we walk through that to see what are the difficulties people experienced during deploying. We also used the workshop as a learning environment for us. And we saw that when people were trying to deploy, it had some one or two difficulties. So we also took that along with the engineers and sat together, drafted some user story mapping technique, and then figured out what we needed to solve to make it happen. And in some, maybe I think on a weekly basis, I sat with different data scientists, because I also had to juggle between Munich and Berlin. I sat with different data scientists to actually walk through how they run their day-to-day experience. So I will sit with them, can you walk me through how you start your day? And I noticed that some of them were starting the notebook server or an EC2 instance and taking a bit of time. They would go back and come back and do a lot of installation. And I went back to the engineers and said, this is what I learned. What we should do is to simplify this experience. So what we then did was to create a CLI tool and that says AI platform start notebook. And that would wrap around all possible libraries that the data scientist might need and start a notebook in, was starting a SageMaker notebook, and it was readily available in 2 minutes. Previously, they used to start the EC2 instance with the libraries installed and all that stuff in about 8 minutes. So we went from 8 minutes to 2 minutes. And what we then did was within the SageMaker notebook instance, because we didn't have SageMaker Studio back then, we installed the Scout 24 specific tutorials. So if you go to the SageMaker notebook, there's a specific tab that says examples, and you will see SageMaker examples. In there, we also inserted Scout 24 specific examples. So anyone starting the notebook and going through the documentation can already go. It's not like the example existed somewhere else. You can go in that SageMaker experience and still see the examples that are really specific to HRS. And then we released, I think, a couple of CloudFormation templates with regards to model deployment, where you can, it comes out with authentication, authorization, which data scientists don't really want to think about. All they have to do is put the endpoint name, and it deploys an AWS SAM serverless API. It comes with authorization, authentication out of the box, and the API is already secure. Your model is secure. You can make an inference request and you get back a response with the auth token. And you don't have to think about how authentication works.
And was it your first product job? Because effectively it was a product managerial.
Yeah, it was my first.
you listed one book, Output-Driven Innovation?
Outcome-Driven Innovation.
How did you learn how to be product manager? Because you had what? 2 months to prove the value, or?
So I actually interned with the technical product manager for the data platform for my previous team for about 6 months.
It's not the first time during this podcast when I see that being a member of product, especially leading platform team, is a very, very close profession to product manager at a company like Neptune, for instance.
For about 6 months with the technical product manager for the AI platform back then, for six months. And then he taught me a lot of things. He also recommended, I think, resources to read. I also did my own bit of research just to understand that this is entirely different from what I used to do. And also the constraint on time, right, just made me think out of the box.
I am a fan of projects with deadlines. It gives motivation to really think about results. And do you remember any lessons, mistakes you've done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quite a number of mistakes, right? So at first, because it was relatively new, and I think this is one of the things that happens with new products people are still figuring out what to build. Even though you have a mission, you're still figuring out what to build. You would conflict with a lot of things. So we had conflicts with a number of data scientists because they felt that we were trying to come on their turf. But it was not that we're coming on their turf. It was more we were talking to almost all possibilities, almost all everybody that we could talk to figure out what to build. And once we resolved that, then they realized that we were trying to solve the problem along with them, not working against them. So we resolved that. So I think that's one of the things I learned, which is if I'm doing any change management or introducing a platform, I need to talk to the people that have already been doing similar things in the company or in that space, just to understand how they are solving it and start from them. One other thing that I would see is, let me think about the learning, is to really focus on what is important. This is something I will do again and again, which is when I spoke earlier, right? I asked data engineers in my previous team that, oh, what do you think we should solve? I'm starting this AI platform. And they said, yeah, we need to solve for data quality. that was the problem that they wanted to solve, but they didn't have the bandwidth to solve it. But that was not the most important at that point in time for us to ship machine learning capability to our customer. So it's to really think about, really thinking and focusing on what is the most important at that point in time. What is the most important problem to solve? And let's say finally is one of the things that I would say I learned more at HRS is that the customer of the company doesn't care if you are AI platform, ML platform, whatever platform or data platform or application platform. What they care about is, am I getting value from the company? So as much as possible, break down silos to get to customer value as quickly as possible.
Yeah, how would you measure success? Like something that you do will take time, a specific amount of time. How do you measure time input against the value it brings?
Yeah, I think one proxy is you look at how long it used to take and how long it takes now. So I remember we were looking at the time to deploy. It used to, at least we spoke with a number of data scientists, they said it used to take them at least 4 weeks. At the time when I left, it took them at most 2 weeks. And we even had one engineer go from exploration to having a REST endpoint in, I think, 4 days or 1 day or so. So that was an important proxy for us to look at. And I think for most platform teams, because they don't have direct impact on revenue. What they would, or bottom line, what they should look at, or what I look at, is lead time. So when does it, in the past, how long does it take for a new data request to go from point A to point X? And if you introduce your platform capabilities, how long does it take? If it used to take 7 minutes and you increased it to 8 hours, then it's not getting value to the customer. You need to figure out a way to shrink that from 8 minutes, which it was before, to maybe 5 seconds.
But then when it comes to the actual capabilities that you kind of introduce into your platform, right? So probably there are multiple of those that could reduce the lead time. And I guess some of them are big, some of them are smaller. How do you choose that now it's time to tackle a bigger one or just iterate on smaller ones and deliver it that way?
Yeah, I think I would say, like I said, it's the most important problem at that point in time. If the big one needs to be solved and it's the most important, we pick it, but then we chunk it. Because I was talking to one of the product owners on my team, and I told the person that I'm lean to the core. I eliminate waste brutally. And what I only think about, if I'm in your discussion, is value to the customer. Even though I have a software engineering background, I still code. What I'm thinking about is value to the customer. And even if we're building the big thing, we have to figure out a way to chunk it as much as possible to what is essential to achieve the customer outcome iteratively. This is how I think about it. The small things, the same, the big things, the same. I would, and eliminate waste in all possibilities.
That sounds like a correct approach.
There is a close one, but a little bit different. I've read relatively recently GitLab's product handbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good one.
And they have the value. One of the values of a company's values is iterate. There is an example. We want to build a car, right? From zero to car. So one approach is design car, build wheels, etc., etc., etc. At the end, you have a car and you can ride. But the GitLab's approach would be firstly to build a
skateboard.
Yeah, exactly. Bike, etc., etc., and you're ending up with the car. It takes longer. There is a waste, right? Because and it is, for me, it is sometimes challenging because I know that, okay, this iteration, yes, is better what we have today, but we will get rid of that in half a year once we have a bike, right? I don't need a skateboard anymore. But it is alternative approach, and I am getting a little bit biased towards GitLab's way, but still have not made my mind.
I know that picture, and I was in one of our team meetings last week. I was showing them that picture, right? And for me, when I mentioned eliminate waste, is don't do work that adds no value to the customer delivery. Even if we have to do some things that maybe technical optimization, you need to tie it to customer value. When I get uncomfortable with some of my teams is that we're doing this optimization, and I ask, so what is the customer benefit out of this? And they cannot articulate it. Then they know that they are on the wrong track. That's what I mean by waste is, if you're doing stuff that anything you if you're satisfied with it as an engineer, that's fine. But when I ask you that, what is the customer value, and I ask myself the same, if I'm going to put my hands on my keyboard and I'm about to send an email or write up some lines of code, I'm asking myself, who's the customer of this, and then what is the value they will get out of it? If they're not probably getting any value, I'm not doing it, or I will just rethink what I have to do. And then I agree with the GitLab approach, because I use that picture a lot with my teams.
Actually, you know, both approach, like you, even doing it in a way that where you are designing a car and or a platform end to end, or and building it step by step, even though particular step wouldn't bring value, like it brings value to complete in the long run, right? But GitLab's approach is more on delivering value each step, because even waterfall way of development, it brings value, right? But you will need to wait 2 years to see it. So at GitLab, I think the main point is to, you know, like bringing small value, but every step.
So we are running out of time. And before we close out the episode, I would like to ask you, Laken, maybe you have some thoughts that you want to leave our listeners with, maybe where to find you, what kind of problems you see and in the MLOps space, etc.
Yeah, to be honest, I think MLOps is in its infancy. Let's say it's in its toddler stage, and it's really going to accelerate with lots of people moving towards automating this large language models and automating how people use it. And I think a lot of explainability would need to happen, especially when enterprises want to start adopting it. And this is where I think everybody, please check out Neptune AI, to be honest.
Thank you.
and I think they're really doing a fantastic, this is my personal view, they're doing a fantastic job in this space, because for companies or enterprises that want to adopt AI, LLM, and ML in the EU, especially in regions where there are regulations to make sure that the customer information is well protected, this is something where Neptune makes it really easy to do. At least bring that explainability in the visual way. So that's my conclusion. You can find me on LinkedIn. My name is the same, Olalekan Elezin. If you reach out to me, feel free to reach out to me, add me. If you send me a message, it might take a bit of delay before I respond. It's not intentional. It's just because I try to bulk how I respond to messages. I apologize upfront, and then looking forward to talking to everyone.
And thank you also to everyone who was listening today, and see you in the next episode.
The ML Platform Podcast was brought to you by Neptune AI. If you would like to learn more about ML platforms and MLOps, check our blog at neptune.ai/blog. Follow us on LinkedIn or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also check out how we help teams solve MLOps challenges with our experiment tracking at neptune.ai. To get notified of future episodes, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.